The Free Congregation of Sauk County is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and a welcoming congregation. This means our invitation is to all, and that all are welcome here regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, political persuasion. You are welcome. A letter from Abigail Adams to her young son and future president, John Quincy Adams. Let me enjoin it upon you to attend constantly and steadfastly to the precepts and instructions of your father as you value the happiness of your mother and your own welfare. His care and attention to you render many things unnecessary for me to write, which I might otherwise do, but the inadvertent and heedlessness of youth requires line upon line and precept upon precept, and when enforced by joint efforts of both parents, I hope have a due influence upon your conduct. For dear as you are to me, I had much rather you should have found your grave in the ocean you have since crossed, or an untimely death crop up in your infant years, rather than see you an immoral profligate or a graceless child. That is hardcore. Whew. You have entered early in life, upon the greater theater of the world, which is full of temptations and vice of every kind. You are not wholly unacquainted with history. You have entered early in life upon, You are not wholly unacquainted with history, in which you have read of crimes which your inexperienced mind could scarcely believe credible. You have been taught to think of them with horror, and to view vice as a monster of so frightful mien that it is to be hated, needs to be but seen. Yet you must keep a strict guard upon yourself, or the odious monster will soon lose its terror by becoming familiar to you. The modern history of our own times furnishes as black a list of crimes as can be paralleled in any ancient time, even if we go back to Nero, Caligula, or Caesar Borgia. That is an intense mom. Yeah, that's like the opposite of a helicopter mom, right? That's like, you better be good or I wish you were dead. That is wild. Debate bros like to use a rhetorical trick. They go on college campuses and set up a table, and they say, "What is a woman?" First off, a trained debater setting up a table in a college campus is like a trained fighter picking fights in the parking lot outside a pro match. There are actual professionals right in the room over there, and you're picking fights in the parking lot. It's a trap. And they know it's a trap because it's 2,000 years old. Plato is talking with his students and they're trying to define what is a man. And they talk back and forth and they finally settled on a featherless biped. So Diogenes goes outside, grabs a rooster, plucks it. I don't know whose rooster is Diogenes. He doesn't care. He just grabs a rooster, plucks it, walks back in and says, "Behold, Plato's man." It really doesn't matter what you say the definition is. It's always going to be something wrong with it, and they're going to pick it apart, and they're going to make you look stupid because it's a word so simple. What's a woman? What's a mom? But by forcing you to define it, they get the advantage. They look smart without actually having to say anything of substance. Because definitions are like that painting by Seurat. It's pretty famous. You've probably seen it. If you stand back, it's a park with people enjoying the park, and then you get close and it's just dots. So when I ask you, what is a mom, please understand that I'm not setting a trap. I'm inviting you to get comfortable with the idea that there is no mom. There is no platonic ideal of momness. There are only moms. That's the answer. That's the gift. The first God, she was a mom. The first crafted object that we found is a lion man, so clearly a guy. But there's only one of him. But very shortly thereafter, something like 20 to 30,000 years ago, depending on who you ask, there are a series of what they call Venus sculptures. They are all across Europe and Asia, as far north as Siberia, as far south as Morocco. Is she a goddess? Maybe. At the very least, she's an idealized picture of femininity, of motherhood. In a time when food could be scarce, she is round. And in a time when childhood could be, or sorry, in a time when childbirth and childbearing could be painful and deadly, she is broad. In a time when children often died before they reached the age of adulthood, she is voluptuous. We don't know her name. We don't know if she was worshipped or just carried for luck. But when I look at her, I see hope. I see mystery. I see a dream. We will never know her name. But she is very obviously a mother. She's the ideal from an age so different from ours that when we look at her, she doesn't speak to us anymore. But her great-granddaughter looks out at us from all of our glowing rectangular screens. We watch and we recognize a mom, but it's no longer an ideal. It's a bar to be leaped. It's a problem to solve in three easy payments of 1995. It's a standard by which you are judged. Can't you just be a good mom? It's the same trick. There are no good moms. There are no bad moms. There's just real moms. Stuck in time and place with their feet in the dirt, doing what they can with what they have, where they stand. Mary Wollstonecraft, yeah, wrote A Vindication of the Rights of Woman in 1792. Her daughter, Mary Shelley, went on to write Frankenstein. Clearly, she had an impact on her daughter's life. She was a mother, and she died when her daughter was 11 days old. Harriet Tubman went 13 times into the South, personally rescuing roughly 70 people, including her own family. She served as a spy for the Union Army and led a raid on Combahee Ferry that captured food and weapons, destroyed supplies for the enemy, and freed over 750 people. She married and they adopted a baby girl named Gertie in 1874. Would you say that she first became a mother in 1874? Sojourner Truth walked away from her enslavement in 1826 with her infant daughter Sophia in her arms. She says she walked because she thought it was proper. She thought if she ran, it would be too sneaky. So she carried her daughter and she walked. She had to leave the other children behind because the laws of the time were evil. Did she in that moment cease to be a mother? When she took her former master to court and became the first black woman to win a case against a white man, did she instantly become a mother again? Marie Curie shared a Nobel Prize with her husband for their research on radium. Then she won another on her own. Then her son and her son, or sorry, then her daughter and her son-in-law won another, making the Curie family the only family with 5 Nobel Peace Prizes. Oh, yeah, sorry, not Peace Prize. You're right. Nobel Chemistry Prizes. You're right. Both Marie and her daughter died from radiation complications. They had a complicated relationship, as is common among people who win Nobel Prizes. They were both moms. Hedy Lamarr, the only woman who doesn't appear on a wall somewhere in this house. She patented frequency hopping, which we still use in Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and GPS today. She also designed a guidance system for torpedoes used in World War II. She was married and divorced 6 times and spent the last 35 years of her life happily single. She raised 3 children, but was estranged from her oldest son since he was 12. She was a lot. She spoke of herself entirely in the third person. You could even say she was a mess. She was a mom. What about all the moms whose names we don't remember? That small infinity without whom we would not be here. That's the magic that the Venus sculptures name without words, that we pause today to honor and remember. Every one of us, worst to best, first to last, has a mom. Not a perfection, not an ideal, a real mom, caught in circumstances, doing what she could with what she had. Most of us have more than one. The physical mom who donated half our DNA, and the other, or others, who nurtured us anyway. All of those people, biological mothers or not, gender typical or not, face an extra fight that most dads don't. We pretend we're so different. Men are from Mars and women are from 15 million copies, still wrong. We are not binary. We are 2 very large and very overlapping bell curves. The difference between any 2 women is likely further apart than the difference between a typical man and a typical woman. Or to put it more simply, the reason why girls don't get to play in the Brewers is because sometimes they'd win. They do not. On April 2nd, 1931, both Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig got struck out during an exhibition game. The pitcher was 17 years old, and her name was Jackie Mitchell. She retired from professional baseball at age 23 because even though she was good enough to take down Murderer's Row, baseball treated her like a circus act. She once had to pitch from the back of a donkey. And no Major League Baseball team drafted a lady until the White Sox picked Carrie Shuler in 1993. Not 1893, 1993. I have hats from 1993. This is the difference between Mother's Day and Father's Day. Both parents contribute 50% of the DNA, but only one parent is likely to carry crippling self-doubt that they secretly, as automatically as breathing, in fact, believe they are bad. Because they have lived under the pervasive bias and forced by entrenched power their entire existence. And yes, we can do a whole nother talk about how it's hard to be a guy too, but today is not your day. Calm down. If we can accept that there are no good moms and no bad moms, here's what that gets you. One, you get to cut yourself and the people in your life a little slack. We're all just nodes on a web under tension, influenced by and influencing everyone we touch. I love my mom, but she's a lot. She does this thing where I've asked her to stop. I don't think she can. Where she just badmouths my dad. It's not super healthy. But then I step back and I look at the whole web of her life and I notice the co-parenting class that she and dad didn't have to go to, but I did. And I notice I notice the child support payments. The child support payments that I have to send and my dad was supposed to send. And I notice the church ladies and coworkers and literal random strangers around town who knew what was going on before she did and told her. I notice that she grew up with an expectation of gentleness and laughter and natural cooperation because that was her home. Those were her parents, and they made it look effortless. And she never experienced it herself. In short, she did the best she could with what she had from where she stood. And to me, she's a great mom. She's a lot, like seriously a lot. But she's mine. I claim her. I want her. That's the second thing this way of thinking gets you. These adjectives are not immutable. They're not assigned from on high. This is the good one, and this is the bad one. They are not claimed for oneself, despite how many narcissistic people might claim to be so. They are awarded by the people receiving the care, which means if your mom wasn't, that power rests entirely with you. How freeing is that? You decide what that relationship means. What part of that life is an example to follow, and what part of that life is a warning to heed? You pick. If the person who contributed half your DNA isn't worthy of that title, then who is? You pick. If they weren't worthy of it when you're 10, and they're doing better now, when do you get to stick that sticker? You pick. Do you see how healing that could be? But if what if you're not the one doing the forgiving? What if you're the one who believes, as naturally as breathing, that you're bad? Or worse, you're no mom at all. This day doesn't even apply to you. I have yet to meet a human being that nurtured nothing. That has never happened in my life. The one you nurture will tell you what they need. And if they don't say it loudly enough for you to hear, someone, maybe the state, will step in and inform you. But most of the time, that's not what happens. Most of the time, the person calling you bad is not the state, and it's not your kid. It's some hidden part of a story buried so deep inside yourself you can't even access it anymore. So hear me today. You don't get to pick good or bad, best or worst. All you get to decide is how you show up today. And then the one you nurture will inform you which adjective applies. And if the adjective they hand you is not to your liking, you get to decide tomorrow how you're going to show up today. There is no such thing as a perfect mom, unless you're the one sticking that label on your mom. Hey, go. So step outside the trap of living down to someone's expectation or up to someone's expectation. What is a mom? You are. Or you could be. Could be a great one. Doesn't matter if you birthed them or found them or lost them or never met them. Biological motherhood is real, but mom? Mom's just a title. Are you a good mom? That's the work of a lifetime. And on behalf of everyone who ever needed one, thank you for trying. We love you too. All right, then as we close out to our closing hymn, I would give an attaboy to this congregation that in the progress of this talk, without realizing it, there are only two women mentioned in this talk that are not exhibited somewhere in this space. You know how many churches in the world that would be true of? You missed Hedy Lamarr and a girl who pitched baseball once. Well done, you. Yeah, next time I be here, they'll be back.